The Katra Podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive.
Today, we're really getting into something fundamental. We're diving into the work of Michael S. Gazzaniga, specifically his book, The Brain, The Story of You. It might just rewire how you think about, well, you.
It really might. This is a pretty bold undertaking, you know, because the book basically challenges that core feeling we all have that there's a single me inside calling the shots consciously.
Right. Instead, Gazzaniga suggests that sense of self, our identity, it's actually a story, a narrative constructed by the brain.
A magnificent story, but a construction nonetheless.
So why dig into this now? I mean, in today's world, we're swimming in information, right? Understanding how our own minds actually put things together, how decisions get made, often unconsciously. Well, that feels like a crucial skill.
It really is. It's almost like a shortcut to knowing yourself better, making smarter choices, maybe.
Yeah.
And just navigating the world. And it hits some deep questions, too, doesn't it? About free will, identity, things philosophers have wrestled with for ages, but now with neuroscience behind it.
Exactly. It's grounded in science, which makes it even more compelling, I think.
Okay, so let's talk about the man behind these ideas. Michael Gazzaniga. He's a big deal in this field.
Oh, absolutely. Often called the father of cognitive neuroscience. He spent his entire career trying to understand the brain basis of the mind. Directs a major center for mind studies now.
But what really makes his perspective unique is the split brain research. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the key. So these were patients who, for severe epilepsy, had the connection between their brain's two hemispheres surgically severed, the corpus callosum.
Wow. So the main communication highway between the left and right brain just cut.
Precisely. And this gave Gazzaniga this unbelievable window. He could essentially talk to each hemisphere separately, see what each side knew, what it could do independently.
So he saw consciousness literally divided.
He did. And that led to incredible insights, not just about what each half does, but crucially, how the brain tries to create a unified sense of experience despite that division, how it weaves everything back together.
Okay, so let's zoom in on the book itself, The Brain, The Story of You. What's its main goal?
Well, it kind of does two things at once. On one hand, it's a really accessible introduction to modern neuroscience. You know, how the brain is built, how it evolved.
But it's more than just a science textbook.
Much more. Its deeper aim is philosophical, really. It's trying to use that science to answer the big question, who am I, for anyone who's curious?
And the central idea that answers that question is not what we'd expect. It's not about a single command center.
Not at all. The core premise is that the brain is more like a confederation of specialized modules. Think of, like, different departments in a company, each doing its own thing.
Handling vision or emotion or planning.
Exactly. And most of this is happening automatically outside of our conscious awareness. It's not one big computer. It's like thousands of mini computers all running in parallel.
Okay, if all these modules are running the show unconsciously, then where does that feeling come from? That feeling that I am the one thinking and deciding.
Ah, that's the star player Gazzaniga identifies, the interpreter. It's mostly located in the left hemisphere, and its job is basically
PR.
PR. Yeah, it watches all the outputs, all the actions generated by those unconscious modules, and then it instantly spins a story, a coherent narrative, to explain why we did what we did.
So it's explaining things after the fact.
Exactly. It creates this powerful illusion of a single rational self making conscious choices in real time, but often it's just rationalizing what already happened.
That's quite a thought. Okay, let's break that down. If our conscious mind is more like the press secretary, what does this view mean for how we perceive reality itself?
Well, it means our experience isn't a direct recording of the outside world, not even close. The brain's locked inside the skull,
right?
It only gets these incomplete electrical signals.
From our eyes, ears, skin.
Yeah, and it builds a simulation. It's best guess about what's out there based on those signals, and importantly, on past experience and expectations.
So things like optical illusions aren't just tricks. They actually show the brain simulation process at work, or phantom limbs.
Exactly. Phantom limbs are a powerful example. The brain's internal map says the limb is there, so it generates the feeling of it. Even if the external reality is different, the internal model takes precedence.
Okay, reality is a simulation. Check. What about control? Who's actually driving the bus?
Well, probably not the you think of as you. Gazzaniga points to research like Benjamin Libet's famous experiments. They found brain activity signaling a decision. Like, to move your finger.
Yeah.
It happens several hundred milliseconds before the person reports actually intending to move it.
Wait, so the brain starts the action before we consciously decide to act.
That's what the data suggests. Consciousness might be one of the last things to get the memo. It sort of catches up and claims ownership of the decision.
It announces the decision like it made it.
Wow.
Post hoc rationalization on a fundamental level.
Pretty much. So if the conscious self is more of a commentator, it really pushes that question. Who am I then?
And the answer seems to be not a single entity.
Nope. That unified self. Gazzaniga argues it's the interpreter module's masterpiece, its greatest trick. We are that collection of competing modules, that confederation.
The split brain studies really drive this home, don't they? Can you walk us through that classic experiment again? It's so striking.
It really is. Okay, imagine an instruction, like the word walk, is flashed only to the patient's right hemisphere.
Which typically controls the left side of the body and isn't the primary language center.
Right. So the right brain gets the command walk. It understands it on some level. And the patient, well, they stand up and start walking.
Okay. But the left hemisphere, the one with the interpreter and language, didn't see the command walk.
Correct. So the researcher asks the patient speaking to their left hemisphere, hey, why did you get up?
And what happens?
The interpreter module, which controls speech, sees the body walking. It has no access to the real reason the command flashed to the other side. So it instantly makes one up.
Makes one up.
Yeah, a plausible one. I might say, oh, I'm thirsty. I'm going to get a Coke. Or I felt like stretching my legs. It confabulates, creates a story to make the action seem intentional and rational.
It's not lying exactly. It's just filling the gap to maintain that sense of a coherent self.
That's the idea. It needs the story of you to make sense.
That completely changes how you think about everyday decisions. If reasons can be invented after the action, then decision-making isn't this purely logical process we imagine.
Definitely not. It's often a tussle between different systems. You got the fast automatic emotional responses, largely from the limbic system.
Your gut feelings.
Right. And then the slower, more deliberate analytical processing in the prefrontal cortex.
Right.
And Gazzaniga stresses that emotion isn't the enemy of reason here. It's crucial.
You mean those cases where people have damage linking emotion to reasoning?
Exactly. Patients with damage to a specific area, the ventromedial prefrontal cortex, they could still reason logically, you know, on IQ tests, but in real life, they were paralyzed by indecision.
Why?
Because they lacked the emotional gut feelings that normally help us assign value to options and make choices quickly. Without that emotional nudge, every option seems equally valid or invalid. They make terrible life choices.
So sometimes that gut feeling is the efficient module making the call.
Often, yes. Yeah. Okay, so this modular view extends beyond just us into how we interact. Gazzaniga says the brain evolved largely for social life.
Why do I need you from a brain perspective?
Well, the need to belong seems incredibly fundamental. Get this. Brain imaging shows that feeling social excluded or rejected, it activates the same brain regions as physical pain.
Seriously. So being left out literally hurts, according to the brain.
It seems that way. It treats social connection as vital for survival.
And empathy, too. Is that wired in?
Looks like it. There are overlapping neural circuits that fire both when we feel pain and when we see someone else in pain. It's like the brain simulates their experience. That's a plausible basis for empathy.
Wow. But, okay, we're not just puppets of this ancient wiring. The book talks about the future, about change, neuroplasticity.
Yes. This is huge, neuroplasticity. It's the brain's amazing ability to change its own structure and function in response to experience. It can physically reorganize itself.
Like the London taxi drivers.
The classic example. Learning the complex map of London physically enlarged their hippocampus, the brain area vital for spatial memory. It shows the brain isn't fixed. It adapts. The story of you can be edited.
Which then opens up all sorts of ethical doors, doesn't it? If we understand how to change the brain, what about enhancement? Brain-computer interfaces. Where does me end and technology begin?
Massive questions. Really deep philosophical territory rooted right there in the neuroscience.
Okay, before our heads explode, let's try to pull out some core themes. What are the big takeaways we can use day to day?
All right, theme one has to be the illusion of unified consciousness. Realizing that the year you experience is an emergent property arising from all these competing modules.
And the reflection on that, maybe cut yourself some slack.
Exactly. If you feel conflicted or hold contradictory beliefs, that's not necessarily a flaw. It's likely just different modules voicing their opinions. It's normal brain function, not a personal failure.
Okay, that's helpful. Theme two, The interpreter's narrative construction, this one feels like the biggest mind shift.
It really is. Knowing that your brain is constantly trying to find causes to build a narrative, even if it means making stuff up, it encourages humility, right?
How so?
You have to pause and ask, is the reason I think I did something the actual reason? Or is it just a neat story my interpreter cooked up afterwards? It makes you question your own justifications.
Yeah. Okay. And the third theme, this is a tricky one, determinism versus responsibility. If our brains are just mechanisms following physical laws, are we off the hook for our actions?
Gazzaniga offers a really interesting perspective here. He says, look, brains might be mechanistic, determined systems, but responsibility, that's not something inside the brain.
It's not a brain property.
No, he argues it's the social contract. It exists in the space between people and the rules of society. We need it for society to work.
So understanding the brain's mechanics doesn't eliminate responsibility.
Right. But it can inform how we apply it, maybe lead to more compassionate or effective systems in areas like criminal justice, knowing that behavior arises from complex biology, not just simple free choice.
That's a really nuanced take. Okay, Gazzaniga has some memorable ways of phrasing these ideas. Any key quotes or core concepts that stick out?
Well, the confederation idea is central. He says something like, the brain is built up of modules, and it's probably best to think about it as a confederation. That image helps.
Not a king, but a council. And the interpreter's role.
He defines it clearly. The interpreter's job is to interpret our responses and narrate a story about these events. Its function is storytelling.
And he's blunt about the implications for our sense of self.
Yeah, things like, we are not unified psychological entities. We don't have a single everything. Directly challenges how we feel intuitively.
And that zinger about timing.
Ah, yes. It is clear that the brain events that produce a behavior precede the reported awareness of intention to behave. The action starts before the conscious go signal.
So putting this all together, how can we actually use this slightly unsettling knowledge in our lives?
Well, first off, just better self-understanding. Recognizing that interpreter means you can be a bit more skeptical of your own instant justifications. Why did I really snap at that person? Maybe not the reason that first pops into my head.
It pushes you to look a bit deeper, maybe rely less on just intuition.
Yeah. And second, it massively impacts relationships and empathy, I think.
How so?
If you understand that someone else's seemingly irrational behavior might be driven by unconscious processes with your interpreter just scrambling to explain it, maybe you react with a bit more understanding, less judgment.
Instead of jumping to they're just being difficult, you might think, okay, what's driving that behavior underneath?
Exactly. It's seeing the machinery, not just the output. And finally, habit change. That neuroplasticity point is really empowering.
Because the brain isn't fixed.
Right. Knowing that you can physically rewire your brain through focused effort and practice, that gives real scientific weight to things like growth mindset. It's not just positive thinking. You're literally rebuilding connections when you learn something new or break a habit.
You can change the story of you.
You absolutely can. It takes work, but the capacity is there.
So wrapping up, what's the one final thought or takeaway that really resonates with you from this?
For me, it's just the profound idea that the self, the person I experience myself as being, is arguably the brain's most incredible, complex, and continuous creation. We are the story the brain tells itself.
Yeah, and for me, it's the sheer scale of the unconscious. Realizing just how much is happening beneath the surface, that conscious awareness is often a more of a spectator, maybe a spokesperson.
Yeah.
That takes some humility to accept, but wow, what insight it offers.
It demystifies things without losing the wonder somehow.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.